again, we're very blessed to have a minister who is organized enough that a sermon can be prepared, and I'm able to have the privilege of reading it to you today. So the words here are from Daryl, and not from me, as you'll know from the very first sentence. Bear with me here, particularly from allergies. Back when I was a teenager, there was a pop singer named Meatloaf. There was a pop singer named Meatloaf who came out with a popular album that upset many a parent entitled Bat Out of Hell. On that album was a very popular song entitled Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, in which a young man tried to go all the way with his girlfriend while in a parked car. In the heat of the moment, the young man promises to love her till the end of time. Then, in a funny twist, the song concludes with him singing, "Now I am praying for the end of time because I don't think I can spend another minute with you." The song is funny because it shows the folly of making a rash decision. Have you ever made a promise you regretted? Agreed to do something for someone or to be present at some event and then anguished that you wish your word wasn't your bond? So what do? Do you keep your promise or renege on it? Children are always vexed with their parents or teachers when they break their word. How many times have you heard a child whine, "But you promised"? The reasons for going back on a word with a child is irrelevant. All they care about is that they are missing out. In the book of Judges, we read about a man named Jephthah, who seems like such an unlikely candidate to lead Israel. Jephthah was a rough and tough man. He had a hard life, and most of his life he sought for acceptance from his own people. He was born as a son of a clan head named Gilead, but his mother was a prostitute, and therefore his half-brothers disowned him and chased him away from his homeland. While on his own, Jephthah recruited a large band of rebels, probably men who had also been rejected by their families and tribes, who became quite adept as warriors. His half-brothers, meanwhile, were coping with the Ammonites, who sought to destroy him. The half-brothers came to Jephthah to ask for his help, offering to make him ruler if he could defeat the Ammonites. After some dickering, Jephthah agrees. Jephthah, at first, tried to negotiate a truce with the Ammonites, but that failed, and so war was inevitable. And, as proof that God can use anyone to accomplish his purpose, the Bible says that the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, and he was able to recruit a sizable army to go to war against the Ammonites. But Jephthah was a brash man, impulsive by nature, and he did something very foolish. Before his army faced the Ammonites, Jephthah made a vow, a promise to God, that if he was given a victory over the Ammonites, he would sacrifice the very first thing that came out his front door to greet him when he returned home. Sure enough, Gilead defeated the Ammonites, and Jephthah returned home a hero. Remember the vow? Well, who should come out his door first to greet him but his own daughter, singing and dancing in joy over her father's victory? Jephthah was heartbroken. He tore his clothes in anguish, for he had made a vow before the Lord, a vow he had to keep. And yes, horror of horrors, he did sacrifice his daughter. On first read, we wonder why God didn't stop him as he did Abraham with Isaac. We wonder why Jephthah didn't go back on his word. We wrestle with the fact this was a different time and a different culture. But in the scriptures, vows are taken seriously and must be adhered to. A similar thing happened in our gospel lesson today. It is an incident from the life of John the Baptist and Herod. Herod was son of Herod the Great, the king who killed the babies in Bethlehem. Herod Antipas had jailed John the Baptist. Why? Well, John was arrested because he spoke out publicly against the vile marriage of Herod to his sister-in-law, Herodias. Herodias, Herod's illicit wife, was furious with John for essentially calling her an adulteress. Herodias desired John dead for sullying her name, which she did to herself. So she hatched a plot on Herod's birthday. After Herod had drunk a copious amount of wine, Herod's daughter, also called Herodias, came out and danced, probably in a provocative way. Flushed with wine, Herod, pleased with the performance, recklessly promises his daughter anything she wants, including up to half of his kingdom. The girl was unsure, so she asked her mother what she should ask for, and here was the elder Herodias' chance. Ask for John the Baptist's head on a platter, and so she did. Herod was immediately sorry for his foolishness, but didn't want to break his word in front of his guests and be embarrassed. So word was sent to execute John and bring his head on a platter. The point of both lessons today is that how we deal with our promises and our vows should never be taken lightly. However, the story of Mark about Herod seems like an odd addition to the gospel. There is a great deal of detail here, and one may wonder why. The simple answer is that John was greatly revered by the early church as the forerunner of Jesus. And so Mark sought to preserve the story of his demise, as in many ways he became the first martyr as a follower of Jesus. Regardless of why the story was originally preserved by Mark, it does push us into a place where we would rather not go. It calls us to account for our own foolish use of vows and promises. It demonstrates how making promises may seem prudent at the time, but it can come back to bite us. I'm not sure if you're experiencing the same level of cynicism as I am of late. It seems everyone is making grand promises these days that never seem to pan out. It's almost as epidemic as COVID. Advertisers promise that their products will change your life, or that theirs is the best one out there. A friend or family member promises to return the money they borrowed. A schoolmate promises to never reveal a secret, and yet ends up on Facebook. Our politicians announce major infrastructure projects and promise that they'll be done on time and on budget. Frankly, sometimes I wonder how they can keep a straight face while saying such things. Politicians in general get us all steamed up with promises after promise that never seem to materialize. Earl Long, the former eccentric governor of Louisiana, said of another politician, "You know how you can tell that fellow's lying? Watch his lips. If they're moving, he's lying." A person who shall remain nameless told me that when he got married, they used the vows that had the words love, honor, and humbly obey. He jokingly said that the last promise was broken not 2 steps outside the church. The moment promises or vows enter the picture, someone gets disappointed or hurt. Now I get why Herod and Jephthah felt trapped into keeping their vows. Jesus said in Matthew 5:33-37, "Again, you have heard that the law of Moses says, 'Do not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you have made to the Lord.'" Then Jesus says this, "But I say, don't make any vows. If you say, 'By heaven,' it is a sacred vow because heaven is God's throne. And if you say, 'By the earth,' it is a sacred vow because earth is his footstool. And if you swear, 'By Jerusalem,' for Jerusalem is the city of the great king, don't swear, 'By my head,' for you cannot turn one hair white or black. Just say a simple, 'Yes, I will,' or 'No, I won't.' Your word is enough. To strengthen your promise with a vow shows that something is wrong." In other translations, this last phrase is translated, "Where anything beyond this is from the evil one." Today, people say ridiculous things like, "I promise on my mother's grave," or "on my firstborn's head." As kids, we used to say, "Cross my heart and hope to die," or "pinky swear." Jesus' point is quite simple. If people cannot depend on the truth of your yes or no, in other words, your word, then in no amount of dressing it up with swearing at something else will make any difference, and may even make things worse. Herod was not a man of integrity. He had proven that time and time again. He was reckless with his actions and his words. Therefore, Herodias could exploit him. Are we reckless when it comes to our word? Can we depend on a simple yes or no? Are we people of integrity, which means people of wholeness? Jesus was a person of integrity. His yes was yes, and his no was no. He did not find it necessary to embellish his promises. Jesus' word never failed. What he said he would do, he did, even down to dying on the cross. The story of Herod reveals to us that the main reason people swear on things or people, the reason people make ridiculous promises that they regret later. Herod's conscience had become distorted or warped. We erroneously think that a conscience is the part of our soul that tells us right from wrong, but that's not entirely accurate. Our conscience tells us what is right from wrong from our own perspective, a perspective that can be shaped by our experiences and our beliefs. If, for example, you believe the Bible is the best way to live a good life, then you will most often let the Bible influence your conscience. If, however, you think that your own opinion is what matters in this life, then your conscience will let you make selfish decisions without discomfort. Jesus, in Luke 13:32, called Herod a fox, and yes, his intention was not to lavish praise on him, just as today the reference to a fox was to describe Herod as conniving, a trickster. Herod put on a public face or persona that spoke of religious devotion and selfless public service, but it was a facade. His self-interest was what guided his conscience. His vows to Herodias was a way of manipulating his guests, a way of making him look magnanimous and generous. Swearing on something or someone is a way of manipulating others' opinion of us to hide the true condition of our souls and conscience. The question comes down to who or what is influencing your conscience or your soul. And I think we are very adept at reading the truth of another's true conscience. Just think of any recent scandal. You can guess that I'm going to suggest to you that Christ should be the one to influence your conscience. In a simple way, I could suggest you follow the advice in any situation to ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? But I should warn you that if you let Jesus influence your conscience, you will be at odds with the rest of the world. The rest of the world will not understand, agree, or appreciate such a stance. When Jesus is the one whispering to you in those decisive moments, you may truly feel like it's you against the world. Tony Campolo tells the story of his friend Will Willimon, who was serving as the dean of the chapel at Duke University when the tragedy of 9/11 occurred. Tensions began to run high between Christians, Jews, and Muslims on the campus, so Will thought it would be good to have a forum in which a rabbi, an imam, and a Protestant clergyman could talk about the way in which their respective religions would propose that people respond to this tragedy and terrorist attack. The Muslim imam explained that according to the Prophet Muhammad, aggression against the Muslim brothers should be avenged. The rabbi pointed out that if a Jew were to attack a Muslim, it would be his responsibility to seek punishment, even capital punishment, against the Jew who did that. To all of this, Will Willimon shrugged his shoulders and said, "You two make it very attractive to join either of your religions, because that's the way I would want to respond to evil. But Jesus teaches me to do something that is much harder. He tells me to love those who would do these evil things, and to forgive those who would commit such horrible acts." If the response that comes to you is impulsive and fits with the world's expectations, I can almost guarantee it didn't come from Jesus. If your response to a difficult situation comes easily to you, it likely didn't come from Jesus. Jesus told us that if we followed him, it would be a narrow road. It would require sacrifice as we pick up our crosses. When I was a kid, I loved to watch cartoons. The animators would often depict a character faced with making a moral decision as having a little angel on one shoulder and a little devil on the other, both of whom looked like the one with the dilemma. It was a cute and effective way to portray the wrestling match we often have in our own consciences. In each instance of this animation technique, the same question prevailed. Who or what is influencing your decision? We can make promises and make oaths and swear on Bibles or whatever, but that doesn't make us people of integrity if we are following the wrong person. Unless Jesus guides our conscience, everything we promise is tenuous and fragile at best. And if Jesus is not guiding your conscience, I guarantee that your decisions will almost always be regrettable.